Welcome to oh man,
Ooh, you haven't
it's been
fucked
a
that up
hot.
that much in a long time.
Oh, I forgot. I should tell them you guys can cuss if you need
Like I said, you
to.
haven't fucked that up that much in a long time.
Yeah, but normally I warn the guests that they're allowed to do it, and I forgot to do it then.
Yeah,
Anyway, all right, we'll
this
try
is a
again.
good like intro bit. Yeah,
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 this will
yeah.
play before the show now because it's been a hot minute since I've messed up, and I normally edit out my mistakes and I leave Ross's mistakes in. So it's on me. I'll probably leave that one in this time. So. Here we go. Three. Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Ference.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, we're socially distanced as always. It's the only way we've ever done the show. I'm in the Midwest, Ross is in the Northeast, and Frenican and Evelyn are in Costa Rica.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Still
exactly.
On the beach, huh? Still doing the beach life.
Yeah, we actually left the beach a few days ago,
oh.
and now we are in the middle of the country, and it's equally beautiful. And
is it safe to assume it's raining right now?
A little bit, like in the afternoon, and yesterday also in the afternoon, and the locals told us that it's so basically the rainy season started earlier this year.
Yeah,
fantastic.
It's supposed to be dry now, but we are quite unlucky with that. But it's only been a few days, so we are okay.
Good.
Rain does people well.
Ross is getting poured on right now. Yeah, he went into barbecue tonight, and he cannot because it's so rainy.
I made the clever decision to barbecue tonight and forgot to check the weather and or radar and barbecued in the rain. So, yeah. Rain is
He sent me a radar picture that's just all yellow.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not normally good.
I have nothing to complain about. I am deeply in tune with what's happening down in the middle of the country, like south-ish west of you, Chris.
Oh, okay.
And
southeast of me.
Is it southeast of you?
The tornadoes that were in Mississippi and Alabama?
Yeah,
that's southeast.
Yeah. Oh, I thought there was part of it in Texas, but...
That's south, dead south.
Yeah, we're fortunate to not have to deal with that. And we wish the best for everybody that has had to deal with that.
So speaking of rain, you have a press car that's great in the rain?
It is actually fantastic in the rain because it has snow tires. I have an M340i, a BMW.
Okay.
It's here until Thursday, I think. And I've spent a lot of time with BMW press cars over the last, let's call it 18 months. So the M340i is, the weird thing about it is that the 3 Series is now basically the size of what the 5 Series used to be.
Yep.
So it is, that's it. That's the car that is in my driveway.
It's
next
a beautiful
to the
car.
It is.
It's very shiny.
Very pretty. The thing about the 3 Series now is that it is as good looking as the M4 isn't good looking. Like,
hold on. So like, is this a 4 Series or a 3 Series now?
So technically the one here is a 3 Series. The 4 Series is the 2-door version.
Okay, the new numbering is confusing me.
Yeah.
Still used to the 357, and that's it.
Yeah.
You want to get into the nuances of like the Grand Coupes and all that stuff? It's like
the sedan version of the coupe version of the sedan version.
Literally, is
okay.
Are the even numbers 2 doors or 4 doors? I like. Yeah, no, we could wax poetic about that for a long time.
I wish they'd have gone the route of Hyundai and made all the odd series have 3 doors. So that way it'd be easier to remember odd has 3, like the Veloster has 3 doors.
But that's not how things work with car numbering anymore.
And, I know, no car numbering.
Mercedes and Cadillac are the worst offenders. And anyways.
At least Lexus still represents the correct size of engine.
But it doesn't, because the LX 600 is not a
A six-liter V8?
Liter V8, no. So,
anyways, but it has this BMW is supposed to be the 4-liter, but it's not a 4-liter.
Oh, God. No, no. It, honestly, if the 3 Series had the 4-liter twin turbo V8, that would be amazing. But it doesn't. So the M340i has the straight six, and it's turbocharged, and it's rated at 382 horsepower and 368 torque. And everybody knows that that is a fucking lie. And it is much, much more than that. And, you know, you could send it to a tuning shop and do intake exhaust tune and basically have like 450 to the tire. And stock, it is unbelievably fast.
Nice.
Like, it's the kind of car that, like, I remember being a kid and thinking the M3 was the fastest thing in the world, and this is, you know, we're
statistically faster
20 years on from then.
Yeah,
but this is so much faster than that, and it's just the M3. It's not the M4, it's not the M3, it's, you know, it's
an what you, M340i or yeah, whatever.
It's what most people walk in the dealer
or 430 and
just, you know, lease. So yeah. Yeah, it's great. It the seats are a little tight, and I'm not a big person.
They're a little tight
for me, and which, like, you, Chris, you and I are obviously not the same size at all.
I categorize you as normal size, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the seats for me are, for daily driver status, borderline.
Okay,
like, they're just borderline. But the very interesting thing is that the Duna, we have a 9-month old, and the base and the Duna are, it's like the biggest car seat you can possibly get,
because it's car seat and stroller in one, as we've established on the show.
Yes, it fits incredibly well in this car. Better, honestly, it fits better than the Blackwing.
Better than the Cadillac.
Either Blackwing, yeah.
Wow.
So, anyways.
Good interior space in a BMW. Who knew?
Yes. Shocker. Yeah, for $67,000 for a 3 Series. Who knew? Yeah, so that's it.
I did not spend that much money on any of mine.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it's thinking about, like, down payments on houses, and I'm like, wow, $70,000 is a lot of money. Yeah, other than that, in my world, I haven't done the CarPlay install yet.
It's only been a week since we recorded, so it's not appalling that you haven't installed it yet. You're still waiting for the appropriate temperatures, and as we've established, it's raining like crazy. You can't work outside in those conditions.
I had two plans for last Saturday. One of them was to install CarPlay. Didn't happen. The other was to bring the Polaris, the ATV that they have so kindly loaned me, home from my parents' facility in which it is currently stored. And they decided to all get stomach bug that I had about 3 weeks ago.
So you said you can keep it all. I'll see you guys later.
Like, I am going nowhere near you. Yeah, so... Anyways, Chris has much, much, much more exciting things to talk about.
Well, we're not quite there yet. And of course, a kid walked in the room behind me. So that's always normal.
But, ooh,
I can't see anybody.
It's the one I refer to as 3.0 on the internet. So it's the 8-year-old. But he's in here making a bunch of noise. I still... For the audience listening, this is going to be like 3 shows in a row where we talk about leaving for the rally and prepping for this Overland rally out in Utah. So that is still happening. The 12-volt refrigerator arrived recently. It's a fridge freezer. I got it from Home Depot of all places. So, like, it's a brand I've never heard of before. It has been plugged in for multiple days in the house and has been functioning at the correct temperature. That was my kind of, like, baseline. I was like, can it at least maintain a temperature for multiple days plugged into a power source? Yes. It also fits perfectly behind the third row seat in the Sequoia now. Awesome. the Arctic 65 quart cooler that I was going to take. You had to move the third row seat a little forward, and they're powered. So like sometimes that gets finicky. And then you had to like slam the trunk lid for it to close. This, it fits there. It's got a handle on the side that a bungee cord wraps around, and there's a little tie down right there, mm-hmm. and it all is right there and firm. Nice. We did have
how big is this one internally?
Oh man, I knew that was the question.
65, that sounds a big fridge. Sounds like
a right. 60. Well, it's a really big cooler is what I had. Mm-hmm. But for the refrigerator, I think it's 48 cans.
Okay.
Like 48 soda cans. So like it's only me on this first rally or on this rally. So like it'll be
yeah. So let's
it's 1.7 cubic feet.
Okay.
And you guys are European and you work in metric system.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that means, but I pretended I did.
So to back up quickly to set the stage for the two of you, obviously, and for the audience, Chris is going on the Rogue Overland Rally.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that before. Yeah.
We have graciously been invited to be what is, I guess, the official podcast of this rally's.
I don't know that we use the word official, but like we will be a podcast on the rally. I am going to record while we're there.
Chris is a podcaster attending the rally.
Yes.
So and he's going to Utah and taking his.
My wife's
definitely
daily driver.
Not his wife's daily.
It's definitely my wife's daily driver. It's
yeah,
it's a 2008 is. Sequoia yeah. Platinum. It now has skid plates and sliders everywhere because I never would have been hesitant about the rally, but they were like, we're going back to our roots of rock crawling. And I went, crap. And I am not a rock guy. Like, and Ross has a Lexus GX that's got sliders and skid. Or well, no, you don't have sliders, but he's got some. Hopefully they're on the way. We didn't get to talk about what we talked about earlier today.
Yeah, I didn't get to make that phone call either. So
anyway, the Sequoia is armored.
Have a GX. Yeah.
Do you have a GX too?
Well, it's the... Well, this is not it, but it's at home, and it's the we have the Prado, and it's the GTX 470.
Yeah,
and you have the GX 460, right?
We have a 460,
but Ross owns a 60. Yeah,
but if you have a 470 Prado, you have the Holy Grail. Like,
yeah, we love it. We absolutely love it. We took it to quite a few places, but I guess we talk about it later. Yeah.
Yes, we'll get into that later because I know where the pictures are too. I found it.
We'll get there.
So the fridge arrived. It's working well. We had a weird test run today. I had forgotten I'd put it in the back of my wife's truck and plugged it in, and she drove off to work today, which meant it powered on and then ran through the day in the back of her truck and didn't kill her battery, which was nice to know. Yeah, so that it survived that test, but I'm supposed to have a standalone power unit. It was supposed to arrive today, according to the shipping estimate. I'm very hoping it arrives tomorrow. I know it's like in the area, so if it doesn't, I'm gonna go hunt down the shipping company and be like, just give me the thing, because I'm leaving very early Wednesday morning. So
by the time this podcast comes out, we're in the future from
yes,
yeah, so.
Hopefully it arrived and everything was amazing.
It went great. I hope for your sake it all went perfectly.
Yes. There was one other shipping item that we were worried about. Factor 55 not accordance, but in cooperation with Warn. Andy Lilienthal, who's been a guest on the show before, sent me a Warn 3/4 shackle. And then Factory 55 sent me the Hitch Link 2.0. Which is basically a big piece of metal that slides into your hitch, and then you still put your regular pin through and carter pin, and then there's just a giant hole on the outside, and that's where the Warn shackle goes. So the Sequoia has a very reliable recovery point on the back, which leading into this rally, I wasn't super concerned about, but like they're still getting snow in Utah, so now I'm like traction boards and recovery points are probably mm-hmm. going to be very necessary on this trip. So I'm very hopeful. I'm hoping to come back and report good things. I'm taking extra tie rod ins just in case and fully expecting to use all of the recovery points at some point. Just because I think it's going to be sloppy.
Which area exactly in Utah?
So we start just north of Moab. We run, I think, two trails in Moab in a couple of days, and then it's into parts of Canyonlands and then towards Capitol Reef.
Oh, nice.
All of it's gorgeous, right? Like, I just, I was out there in the fall of 2020, just my dad and I, during the pandemic. And I can't wait to go back. I freaking love Southern Utah. I think it's absolutely gorgeous.
I'll be there soon.
Yes, it just takes you 4 days or 3 days.
Does the Sequoia have the center locker, or is it just open, open, open?
No, it has center locker. Yep, center dip lock, four low works. Did we go over on the last show all the things we did to it? We did, yes, and we did. All the 4x4 stuff just got a fluid refresh, front dip, rear dip, transfer case. Brakes are resurfaced. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. We should be good to go. I just, to be honest, what I wish I had was a bigger fuel tank.
You have
it. Is it the 5.7?
Yes. It's the 5.7 liter, and it's got a 26-gallon tank that they were like, be ready for like 250 miles. And I was like, five-gallon extra jerry can is going to come in handy. 250 off road is going to be a stretch for the Sequoia, I think. So, yeah, you turned it off a lot.
You'll be fine.
I'll be fine.
Worst case scenario is somebody else on the trip has the fuel that you need.
And I will be making friends with many podcast stickers and money if I need to.
Speaking of. If the two of you have a permanent location, let me know and I'll send you podcast stickers.
We love stickers, but unfortunately, or actually not unfortunately, we don't have a permanent place.
Yeah, say it's not unfortunate. It's perfect.
That is the opposite of unfortunate. That is the best.
All right. You already segue, Ross. Keep going.
Yeah. No. So what we'd like to do to kick things off with our guests is to have you give us your, what do you call it, elevator pitch?
Elevator pitch is what we normally
refer to. 30-second, 2-minute, spiel on who you are, what your place is in the off-road world or overlanding world or world in general, and, and why you love what you're doing.
Right. So I guess I'll go. So we are Ferenc and Evelyn. Evelyn and Ferenc, and we are originally from Hungary, and we've been doing quite big trips in the last, basically since we met, but our larger trips include drive to Africa through the Sahara Desert with our Prado 120, and then we drove all the way from Europe to Singapore through China and everything in between. And now what we are doing is we actually, with another vehicle, with a 4x4 van, it's a not very well known brand in North America, Iveco, it's an Italian brand. We are driving from what it started in Halifax, Canada, all the way across the country to Alaska. And then we are trying to drive down to Argentina, Ushuaia. So that's our current trip. And otherwise, we love off-roading, we love traveling. In general, I love cars and I love traveling, and overlanding is the combination of the two. So that's what I love in this. And luckily, Evelyn was on board since we met. So we can do this together.
Yeah. Yeah, I got into overlanding thanks to Ferran. So since we met, he kept talking about it. And before that, I have never heard about the term overlanding. So for me, it was just like, holidays. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but since we started dating, he promised me that once we're going to quit our jobs and we're going to travel for a whole year. And I was like, wow, who is this guy?
If someone showed up and was
2 years
like
now, actually in total, or more than 2 years now.
Because we quit our jobs in the end of 2017 and we were traveling for a whole year in 2018. We did some backpacking as well. So first we went to Africa in January, and that trip was 6 weeks long,
but that was overlanding. That was the drive. That was backpacking. That's what I'm
Yeah. And after that, we did 2 months backpacking in Southeast Asia, 1 month in Bali and 1 month in Vietnam. And then we went to Singapore from Budapest, and that was six months long overlanding by car. Yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah. So we've had someone on it.
This current trip on the past already the... longer than all our trips before. Like, sorry. I think there's a delay. Good. But so yeah, this trip is already longer than our previous trips all together.
Really?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. Chris, what was your question?
I was like, we've had someone on who's done the Mongol Rally before, but I've never really heard about going all the way to Singapore.
Yeah, I've done that before. just before we met with Evelyn, like I've done that, and it's a long story, but we broke down in my friends in Tajikistan, and we had to sell the car. It wasn't the cheap car version. It was a different Mongol Rally where we had to buy a proper, like a pickup truck or a van or something that can be then donated to a charity in Mongolia, and then they turn it into an ambulance. So there used to be two versions, and we didn't quite make it to Mongolia. We had to abandon the car, or actually we sold the car in Tajikistan, and then we made it to Mongolia. Anyway, my dream was to actually get to Mongolia with a vehicle, with our own vehicle. And and yeah, that's why we were like, okay, when we met, I kept talking about this. And then a few years later, we actually done it. And while we were planning it, we were like, why stop in Mongolia? Let's carry on to Singapore.
Yeah.
Obviously, the China part is complicated and expensive, but that we organized that, and it was quite an experience.
Yeah.
So we could talk about the adventures, and I'm sure we will over the next little while, and we can certainly talk about the vehicles that you've taken on your adventures. But what I'm curious about from the get-go is, when you met, had you broached the subject of, yes, I would like to explore the world, and I'm planning to go about trekking country to country, you know, from place to place, and, you know, being what's essentially nomadic, or is this something you knew when you met each other, or was this like a learning process as you went? Did you meet each other and go, yes, I plan to see the world? Like, that's something we like to explore with our guests who do this.
Yeah, so before we met, I only traveled in Europe by plane, so it was really easy travel for me. And then we met just after Ferenc got back from the Mongolian rally. And I guess, the experience was quite recent for him. So that was the only subject he could talk about. And he told me like, oh, wow, I spent 5 weeks in a car, and you cannot imagine the feeling when you are not driving on a tarmac, you know, you just only follow tracks in the grass and something like that. He told me something like that. And I was like, wow, sitting in a car for 5 weeks.
That's awful.
I cannot do that. I'm always busy. I always have to do something like workout and everything. And I was like, no, that's not for me. But he just kept talking about it. And
but when we actually met, I only owned a Honda S2000. It was obviously nothing to do with off-roading.
To follow about the S2K.
Yeah. and then when, like, kind of we were looking for a daily driver that can be used a bit more, and we were like, okay, so let's buy something that can actually go places, not just, you know, any kind of daily driver. And so that's why we ended up with the 120 series Land Cruiser. It's called the Land Cruiser in Europe, the GX470. And it turns out that's the one. And slowly we kind of bought the gear. And obviously, of course, my experience going to Mongolia was very overwhelming, very eye-opening, that this can be done. You can take your own car and travel to another continent and cross borders and camp anywhere you want and all the kind of stuff is just like, it was mind blowing. And by the way, I can talk about this for an hour, like the definition for overlanding, and it's a big subject online, obviously, but it should include the point of crossing international borders. If you don't cross international borders, it's not overlanding, it's car camping.
That's okay.
Glorified car camping is kind of the mantra, the subtle unknown mantra of what most of the hobby has become. So
it doesn't actually matter. I'm kidding, but yeah.
I'm with you. Like, to me, when I first discovered all of this, international travel was a big part of it. A lot of it's available in the US because we're such a big country in general.
I think because we traveled through the US, obviously the reason why I think it's shooting, like, if there is a definition, the definition should include international border crossings, is because just traveling through the US is too easy. Like, yeah,
exactly.
You can make it more difficult with off-road trails, of course, and some rock crawling or whatever, but that's off-roading. That's something else. There is no problem solving as such as, like, border crossings. Like, you have to understand the other person. You have to figure out where to get your next stamp, how to import your vehicle into the country, and where is your next police checkpoint if you need to be afraid of that at all, and just where to buy fuel, what kind of fuel, all that kind of stuff. Anyway. And then if you need to find a mechanic, how to find and how to explain the problem in Spanish or in Tajik or whatever.
Exactly.
So just to go back to your original question, so it was very much an eye-opening experience for me to travel all the way to Tajikistan. And we made it to Mongolia eventually with another vehicle. But when we met, we were kind of like, okay, let's buy a car that can, or a truck that can take us around the world if we wanted to. So the stock was, I think, good enough already, but we started to buy a little, like, we bought a fridge, we bought a rooftop tent, just the usual stuff that people do. And then
the snowball effect is amazing, isn't it?
And then the fact that we wanted to go to the Sahara Desert, we thought, like, okay, let's just do a bit more to this truck. And I took it to a professional off-roading workshop in our garage in Austria, and they made all the necessary changes that I asked for, like, obviously a lift, a proper roof rack, a snorkel, all the usual gear, and bash plates and all that kind of stuff. And it was pretty good through all the really difficult trails, through the Atlas Mountains in Morocco or the Sahara Desert in Mauritania, or all kinds of stuff. And of course, then on our trip from Europe to Singapore, we ended up in some sketchy places, I mean, in terms of trails and stuff, and it performed really, really well. But we kind of went through this classic route of needing more comfort and permanent table inside and be able to camp anywhere we want in bad weather, in good weather, all that kind of stuff. And that's why we ended up with a van, but it had to be 4x4. And I think there are better choices in Europe with 4x4 vans than in North America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. North America, we're super limited to Sprinters and Ford Transit vans that are all wheel drive.
We're super limited to the things that Europe has already had and that we are just getting here over the last few years.
Right.
So I
think the Sprinter is a good platform, but it's a unibody construction. I think that makes it a lot weaker than, for example, the
Greco. Chris has some opinions on this.
not hard opinions, just I spent a week in a transit all-wheel drive. Well, my only Sprinter anecdote I always used came from Dan Edmonds, Ross, which his brother's diesel Sprinter broke down in Western Colorado in a legit city in Grand Junction. And it had to either get towed to Salt Lake City or back to Denver to get worked on because nobody around would work on it.
Or wait weeks for parts.
Yeah, I want to say he only waited 3 days, but was quoted 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he went to the dealer every day and was that guy who was irritating. So they made sure they got his vehicle out.
Man, the things that you take for granted if you own a Toyota 4x4.
Oh, yeah. like that's a big game changer for us in the wrong way, because we're traveling with an Italian van that's 25 years old is a lot different than at that point newish Toyota. It just, we weren't expecting any problems, and then even if you end up having problems, there's just anybody around the corner who can fix it. And it's just, and whereas with this one, there's a lot of work going on.
I have a random question. Because you said you're from Hungary.
Yeah.
So does speaking Hungarian help in certain parts of the world? Because isn't Hungarian one of the hardest languages? Like, does it not have any?
And it's unique. It doesn't have any connection with any
languages. That's why it's hard. Whatsoever.
And it's, so it's pretty much useless to learn another language, because everything is from scratch. Like, so it's not connected to, a lot of people think it's a Slavic language. It isn't. It's like, it's supposed to be like Finnish, because it used to be, at some point used to be the same language thousands of years ago, whatever. But it may sound the same, but we wouldn't understand anything whatsoever in Finnish. And some people think it's close to Turkish. It isn't. Some words are the same, but that's historical reasons. So to answer your question, no. So we have to,
So you're just as helpless as we are when we travel sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only language I speak properly is English. I'm picking up Spanish now. We have to. And Evelyn picks up Spanish. When you have to, you do.
Well, we have to, yeah. But Ferenc speaks a little bit Italian, so for him it's easier to pick up some Spanish. Yeah.
Well, nice. They say immersion's the best teacher. Just learn a lot. Just be around it.
That's also true for mechanical problems.
Yes.
The best way to learn how to do things is to just do them, whether it ends well or not, you know. But so how many countries have you been to thus far?
For me, this is the 60th country. So
60th? Like 60?
Yeah, maybe 61.
For me, about 80, 85, I don't know.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but I think we visited like 50 countries together.
Yeah, like 50 countries together.
Wow. Can you?
Yeah, there's a lot of small countries in Europe. It's much easier.
Yeah.
Does Luxembourg count?
Yeah. We're looking at things from a slightly opposite side of the globe perspective on this. Can you give us like three or four of your absolute highlights, your favorite places you've ever seen on that side?
On Europe or Asia side, or just anywhere?
Let's do, this is gonna be fun. Let's do two on the Europe Asia side and two on the side in the relative space that you are right now, because you're very far from where that part originated.
In Europe, definitely Slovenia and Italy. In Asia, for me, Mongolia and China. Yeah, those were the highlights. And in America, I would say Yukon and Alaska. Yeah, if I have to
pick Alaska
territories. Yeah, so Yukon and Alaska. Yeah, although we really like Costa Rica.
Oh no, did their internet just freeze? Okay, it's back.
I thought it was a little bit easier to choose
I thought my headphones were on. Fritz.
No. You're good.
We're still here? Okay.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a little bit easier to choose because I'm a huge fan of Mongolia. Like I don't think there is a better country to do overlanding because the country is empty and there's no roads in many, many places, just tracks and trails and stuff. So Mongolia is absolute number one for me in the whole world. And second, Italy is also very good. Like, Italy is my second favorite country, but for different reasons. And on this side of the Atlantic, I've never been to Costa Rica before, but it's just such a good place. I didn't expect it to be that good. It is really, really good. And otherwise, Utah just blew my mind.
Really?
Yeah.
It's another world.
Yukon. I didn't want to say the Yukon. I didn't want to mention it even like at the same level as Utah, because Evelyn already mentioned it, but Utah, we had a really, really good time. We spent several weeks there, and all the places that you just mentioned before, we went to all those places, and just that will remain on this trip one of the highlights, I'm pretty sure.
That's so interesting.
I think I went past it. I'm in Baja.
Yeah, we tend here, I mean, certainly in our podcast and in our, you know, off-roading culture in America, we idolize Utah. So it is very interesting to hear from the outside perspective that it holds the same regard.
Yeah, it's totally unique. The landscape, the trails, and how in some parts how empty it is. That's also from a European point of view, it's so nice, because Europe is just overcrowded and everything is restricted. You cannot really do, there's certain places where you can go off-roading, but not many. And
what's the most
Canyonlands was the highlight.
Canyonlands was our favorite.
First we went to Moab. We discovered the area around Moab, and then Arches National Park. We did a hike there, and after that we went to Canyonlands, and we were like, oh, wow, it's getting even better.
Chris is like, I'll be there.
Point of Gulch.
Chris is like, yeah, you know, I'll be there.
I can't wait to go back. It's seriously some of the most beautiful places in the U.S.
It was like a 12-mile hike.
That's a good hike.
Day one, and then 12 miles back, and obviously next day it's pretty good. And then we took our tents and food and water and everything, and just camped in, like, for us this was the wilderness, just camping in there.
What's the most remote you've been, whether it's, you know, camping out of a vehicle or parking somewhere and hiking?
I guess it must be the Yukon,
somewhere
in the Yukon. Like, we went to the Dempster Highway. There's some pretty remote places on that road, and obviously we went off the Dempster Highway to camp and found some places. That's just such a
That's up there.
Absolutely fantastic place in the world.
Yeah, but Chris and I.
We've
been talking about Dempster. And what's, Chris, what's the other one? The
Mackenzie Trail?
No, not Mackenzie. Jesus. It'll come to me the second we end the show, obviously, but
per normal.
Yeah. It's pretty country up there. And, you know.
Yeah.
People tend to forget about the remoteness of high North America, you know, the way that people think about, like, you know, Mongolia in terms of remoteness.
How often are you guys just by yourselves, the two of you, or how often do you guys like travel with another group per se?
It like varies. It's most of the time we travel totally alone, and then every now and then our travel plans or our schedules just match with other people. And obviously when you meet like-minded people, then it's easier to travel together. But on like towards Asia, we were almost always alone, because it's just that it's hard to meet other overlanders because the place is too big. But here on the Pan American, everybody seems to be doing the similar routes. So it's much easier to meet people. And that's a lot of fun. We love, here we camp with Richard and Ashley. And there's just so many people from Europe are doing this trip now, because obviously for 2 years, nobody could travel. All those people are here now. And then there are a bunch of people who plan to travel to Asia. That's, of course, is not possible right now. So all those people are here as well. So it's just twice as many people doing it than before, I think. And of course, on this part of the world where we are right now in Central America, it's just obviously not that many roads to disappear from other people.
Exactly. You're going to end up meeting people there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Like yesterday, it was crazy. We met like 10 European vans, and we are next to 3 vans from Brazil. Are we okay?
Yeah. No, you're back. There you go. Okay. I'm just going to make another note because I got to cut that glitch too.
Yeah, we met a lot of other overlanders in the Yukon. And then, yeah, we got connected again in Alaska. And yeah, in the US, we met, in some travelers in California, and also obviously in the Tetons, and in other national parks as well. And also in Mexico, on Baja. Yeah
Baja was full.
C2.
Or actually, Baja was full.
I think we were before the main season, but still there were quite a few.
Where in the lower 48 did you visit?
We entered in Washington, and then we didn't want to do the Pacific Coast because that's a quite easy drive in the future when we want a vacation at some point.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't do that. So that's why we've done kind of the Midwest, or not quite the Midwest, but like the Continental Divide Trail? I think around the Continental Divide. We wanted to do that, and that's why we headed inland towards Montana, and then Yellowstone National Park, and then the Tetons, and then headed south.
Oh, you did Yellowstone. Oh, man.
Yeah. It was crowded. That was the one that was
so
very
jealous.
Crowded. And then it was fantastic. And then the Tetons was pretty nice. And then of course Utah, and that's where we spend most of the time, of our time within the US. And then what I didn't have any expectations of, because I didn't know what to expect, was Joshua Tree.
Yeah,
it was we ended up on a pretty nice trail. I can't remember the name of the trail, but it was a dry riverbed, and it was with the family that you just showed before with the white Sprinter van. And that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
And tough, actually.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's so good.
It looks like that might have been around that area.
This is Baja, actually.
Baja, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Regionally close.
Regionally, yeah. It's kind of close.
It's not that far, yeah.
Dry riverbed. Let me see.
Actually, one of the pinned reels on...
At the top.
At the top is from there. One of the pinned ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here we go. It's labeled as soon as I clicked it. It's at Joshua Tree.
Nice.
Some solid spotting work, too.
Oh, yeah.
Spotters matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Years ago, I did a Jeep trip, and I climbed a small section of rocks where people with much bigger tires and lifts were like, just can't do it. It's like, are you paying attention to the guy at the top that's telling you where to put your tires? Because that's how I got up. Like, I just listened to him. It was totally fine. Dude, that's great.
Lots of comments about that. But yeah.
Dude, the van's good. It looks great.
It does.
I got faith in an Italian van. It'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, there was a period when we had more problems than what I like. Because I think, as much as I like learning about these, and the reason why we actually bought an old mechanical truck so that I can try to figure out and fix it if it needs to be. I don't like modern trucks or vans or cars because it's just, you don't know where to start. And I don't know. I just like the old ones. And we ended up, so there was there was an overdue maintenance work because of the timing chain in the engine that had to be replaced. It should have been replaced before. I didn't know that. I'm original lawyer, so I'm figuring these out. On the and it's like, because I know like some people would think like, oh, how come you didn't know that? Or how come you didn't replace it before this big trip and all that kind of stuff? Because I didn't know I had to. So like, even though I was always interested in cars, I never fixed cars. So it's a different thing. And once that was replaced, that was only in Oaxaca in Mexico, so kind of recently. Since then it's a lot better. And but to be honest, before that we didn't have many problems, because as soon as I found out that I have to worry about this, we started to have problems.
Yeah.
Funny, up until I didn't know that this was an issue, it wasn't an issue. As soon as I found out it's an issue, then it's like problems started to happen.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you got it taken care of. We've reached the time at the end of the show. I'd say I'll just kind of go through it real fast. You guys are about halfway through the Americas now?
Yes, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to ship like from Panama to Colombia, and that's the next leg. Yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
So people can follow along. The website is at overlandsite.com. Right? I said at the beginning of a web address, which is really weird.
That, yeah.
Because all your social media is at overlandsite. And right, I just went ahead and combined the two because, you know, saving time. Just, I'm sorry, guys. So you can follow Frenick and Evelyn at overlandsite or overlandsite.com. We'll go ahead and leave that awkward part in. Tonight's a show where I mess up a lot. I apologize.
Love it.
For those who normally listen to the show, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm still making the push for Spotify, mainly because I can see who follows us on Spotify now. Yes. So if you haven't followed us on Spotify, click that follow button. It helps us. You can read what we write on the Hooniverse, the Hooniverse on Twitter, the Real Hooniverse on Instagram. Ross is No Not Like the One from Friends, and I'm at Overlean Dad. And we did a show. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us.
Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Let us know when you're at your next landmark, and let's do another one.
We'd be keen, yeah. That'd be good. Yeah.